How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. So much news to talk about today, including a TNA pay-per-view tonight. It's been a slow last couple of weeks for pay-per-view. No UFC pay-per-views until mid-April. No WWE pay-per-views until early April. And we haven't had a UFC pay-per-view in a couple of weeks. Still, plenty of programming to talk about. Bellator is every Friday night. We've got SmackDown Friday nights. A live episode of Ultimate Fighter this past Friday night. As noted, tonight's TNA Slammiversary pay-per-view. Rey de Reyes. Actually, I believe tonight is Victory Road. Doesn't matter. We'll talk about it. Rey de Reyes down in Mexico. We'll give you some information on that show, which is taking place tonight. Plus, all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And, in fact, a little bit of talk today about amateur wrestling. The NCAA championships going on this weekend. We're going to talk about that, plus the latest on the WrestleMania card. We've got some new matches since last week's show. We'll talk about those, plus more thoughts on the finishes of the top matches, perhaps the match order as well. Should be an interesting discussion there. Leading into Raw tomorrow night. We've also got last week's Raw to talk about, the Rock concert versus John Cena's battle rap. What did you think of the show? Haven't talked to Mike about that yet, but we're going to talk about that here on this program, give my thoughts as well. Also talk about Impact, a new WWE film. They're heading back into a partnership with Lionsgate, the people responsible for See No Evil. What is their newest horror flick? We'll talk about that later on in this program. Plus, a lot of craziness involving Quentin Jackson. Ric Flair has got an update on whether or not he can go to the WWE Hall of Fame induction of the Four Horsemen. We'll tell you about that. Plus, Battle of the Giants UFC pay-per-view coming up in May. Vince Russo is doing seminars, of all things, and a lot more. We got so much stuff to talk about today. We're going to be back in just a moment to kick it off. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and if you can't find it in any of those locations, we stream live worldwide on the internet every week at WrestlingObserver.com. Head up there and check that out. Joined today, as always, by Mike Sempervivi. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Mike, do you have any interest in the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view coming up this evening?
Not really, no, but I'm going to watch it anyway. I have not been blown away by the last couple of impacts, and no. Although I am interested to see how James Storm's knees, kind of compare to Bully Ray's calves.
That's right. James Storm recently had surgery on his knees, I believe, and he's supposed to wrestle today. So that should be interesting. It is Victory Road. I guess it's called Victory Road because it is the road to lockdown, which actually, I know they pushed Genesis as their big pay-per-view of the year, but the biggest shows they've ever done have been lockdown shows. These are all cage matches. I remember that when I was young, not that young, but about 10, 12 years ago, I used to wrestle in the ICW with Tim Flowers, and every year he would do an all cage match show. And at the time, I was always thinking, why do you have all cage matches? Doesn't that kind of kill the gimmick? Don't people kind of get sick of the cage by the end of the show? Isn't that kind of overkill? But you know what? The all cage match show was the biggest show they did every year. And the all cage match show is the biggest show that TNA does every year. So as much as it doesn't make sense, I guess, to old school pro wrestling bookers to have a show with all cage matches, it is a show every year that consistently draws. So can't take anything away from them. That's coming up next month. But on the way there, we've got Victory Road. And the main event of the show here tonight, well, it's not for the title. It is a singles match with Sting and Bobby Roode. No belt on the line. It is no holds barred. What are your thoughts on how this match is going to go?
I would assume it's going to be, you know, I guess because the title's not on the line, you know, Sting can get the win here, although I just think there's going to be some sort of nonsense or chicanery taking place, and Bobby Roode wins. And you know what? That would make sense in a match where the title's not on the line, that Bobby Roode would actually win clean. So I'll go with that.
That Bobby Roode is going to or not going to?
Bobby Roode is going to win. Actually, he won't win clean, but he won't win the match.
I think that Bobby Roode should just beat Sting. I know that people are going to say, oh, you could have the heel beat the babyface in the main event in an untitled match. But listen, your big match of the year, supposedly, the one you've been building up for like 6 months, Bobby Roode and James Storm is taking place in the main event of Lockdown for the title. So give James Storm a win, give Bobby Roode a win, and have two winners fight each other in a cage.
Perhaps stop that. That makes way too much sense.
Too simplistic.
And although, you know, I do hold out a hope for TNA with the new regime in place and I guess the new direction. And the TVs, you know, have at times, even though this week I thought was just, I was relatively apathetic towards, they have had some good stuff at times. So, you know, yeah, that would make the most sense. And I hope that's what would happen because they have not done a good job leading up with Bobby Roode and James Storm, and that was one that I thought was, to me, a complete no-brainer, whereas, you know, they had the fans behind James Storm. There was a guy that had been relatively untouched and unscrewed over by the system the whole time, where people didn't turn on him or turn apathetic towards him, and not to say that they have, but a lot of the luster has been off of it, and I'd like to see those two in a big match at Lockdown.
I think that it's probably going to be a decent match here. It's no holds barred. That means you can use a lot of gimmicks. You can use a lot of tricks. So I think it's going to be a good main event. Underneath that, you've got Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy. Maybe I'm the only one, but I don't have high hopes for this match. I think it's going to be all right, but Kurt Angle is allegedly going to attempt to win his way onto the Olympic team next month. Although he has now admitted that it is... The chances are slim to none, I believe were his exact words, of actually making the team. But he's going to try. But I watched Kurt Angle. It's been about 2 months now. He's training really hard. And, I mean, obviously, if you're trying to make the Olympic team, you know, you're going to train every single day. You're going to work really hard. He's 43, I believe, 42, 43. He looks like he's in pain every moment of every day. He's in there, in the ring. He's doing the least amount possible in his matches to try to not get hurt. I don't know. The old Kurt Angle would have had a great match with Jeff Hardy. The Kurt Angle that I've seen for the last 2 months training for the Olympics, I don't think he's going to have a good match with Jeff Hardy. I think it's going to be a very, very basic match. I think it's going to be slow-paced, and I think people are going to be somewhat disappointed by this match.
Well, just thankfully we won't see a playoff of Pat Kern and Joe Warren. Joe Warren, who was also should not have been doing what he was doing if he was trying to get on the Olympic teams. Kurt Angle, that's going to take place next April 23rd, 24th, something like that. That's when those Olympic trials take place. There's no reason that Jeff Hardy should not win this match, and I don't think it's going to be... I have higher hopes for it than you do, but it just, you know, part of me, my amazement of watching this match is going to be really, and I know I'm all hyped up because the D1s have taken place, and Angle, this whole thing with Angle after all these years of talking is actually looking like it's going to come to pass where he'll at least show up for this thing and try to get on the team. But, you know, Jeff Hardy wins here because I don't know what else you would do.
How much of the NCAAs have you watched?
I've watched a good deal of them. I watched the quarterfinals and the semifinals on ESPNU, and then I missed part of the earlier finals of the lower weight classes, but saw all of last night, which was on ESPN.
Having watched some world-class wrestlers, and granted, we haven't seen Kurt Angle wrestle, amateur wrestle, since he's begun training. I haven't seen any footage because it's secret, you see. He's working on secret techniques. But having seen legitimate, real-life, world-class wrestlers, what are Kurt Angle's chances here?
Pretty much what he said, slim to none. And really, it's none. I just cannot see, even for all his tricks and his guile and his intensity and everything that drove him through, his neck injuries and always being undersized and the whole nine yards, You know, I'm sorry. It's just his body. Even it's not his age. It's not his age because Dan Henderson and Randy Couture can still give kids handfuls because of their guile and their experience. It's because of his body. And it just, I'm surprised it's even gotten this far. And I got to give him credit for going for it. But it's just absolute, I don't want to say it's insanity to me, but it really is a pipe dream.
You know, I actually disagree. I think it is his age, and I'll tell you why. Kurt Angle was an undersized heavyweight when he went for the gold and when he won the gold. And the reason he was successful as an undersized heavyweight was because of his stamina. And if you look back at some of his diaries of his conditioning routine, I mean, it was outrageous. I mean, it was well beyond... I mean, overtraining doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of his training regimen back then. And he was a guy who he outlasted bigger opponents. He had better cardio. He had better wind. And at 42, 43 years old, that's impossible. Literally, I would say that is impossible. I don't care how hard he trains. I don't care what he does. It is impossible that he can have anything even approaching the stamina he had when he was in his mid-20s doing this for the Olympics.
Oh, and you're right. But, you know, guys in their, you know, late 30s and 40s come back to, like, the Midlands and things like that and to those open tournaments and oftentimes do well where if he caught guys on a bad day, you know, if it wasn't because his body was so broken down and he had enough gas, I mean, and continued to train like that, you know, I don't know. I think it's as much that. It's just he's going to get, I mean, body-wise, he's going to get crushed.
But I just it depends on what your strength is as a wrestler. I mean, you know, guys like Couture and Lin-Lin, I mean, they're still really strong, powerful guys that can, you know, Couture locks people up in his clinch and everything like that. And I mean, that's the kind of thing that can last. You know, everyone's seen the old guy that crushes the apple still. You know, that's sort of thing you can keep for decades. But
Danny Hodge.
Yeah, but the speed and the speed and the wind, that's what you lose as time goes on. We actually have to head to the break. Sorry I cut you off. We'll get back to you after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and of course streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We were here talking about Kurt Angle, the NCAA Championships, and I cut Mike off before the break, but point I was trying to make, and then we'll go back to him, is that how long you can go in amateur wrestling or any of these sports really all depends on your style of fighting and what your strengths are. Just an example, a guy like Dominic Cruz is going to destroy everybody right now and maybe for a few more years, but because his style is dependent so much on speed, as he gets older and he loses his speed, all of a sudden, his game is going to go out the window. Whereas if you get a guy who, for example, he's just got tremendous strength and power in the clinch, or maybe he's a guy that has a crushing strength top game, for example, that's sort of thing that you can use that skill for decades. That's the kind of skill that it withers away slower than speed or conditioning. And since Kurt Angle, he relied so much on skill and conditioning and speed and conditioning, not skill. Everybody relies on skill, but so much speed and so much conditioning. At 42 years old, those are the two aspects of his game that are going to go the quickest. So it's to me, I don't understand how he could even attempt to. He's going to try, but to win or to place or to even make the Olympic team, I just don't think it's possible.
Is he being followed around by documentary cameras or anything like that?
Do we know that?
Where if he's, you know, because again, he's not slim to none is being giving. You know, where he's doing this for more than just wanting to go out there and do it at this point.
Yeah, I don't know if they're documenting it. They should be, just for himself, just to have something to look back on in future years. But I don't know. And in case he does make the team.
Which, you know, if that actually did happen, I mean, that would be If anything was going to bring some sensation back, and I mean, there's always great stories in amateur wrestling. It's just nobody ever hears them because the sport doesn't do a good job in hyping itself, and it's not like Americans really do backflips for the Olympics anyway. So, that would at least be as great of a sensational story as you could possibly get for USA Wrestling. With that said, you know, there's still enough people that, you know, they respect the hell out of Kurt Angle, but they hate his career path still, and they would look at it as a big slap in the face, although then again, you know, they've kind of done it to themselves.
All right, we've also on this show, we are talking about the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view, which airs immediately after the show goes off the air on pay-per-view. By the way, we're going to have live running play-by-play on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com, and also I am going to be doing live tweeting of the show on Twitter, of all things. At Brian Alvarez is the address. That's at Brian Alvarez. We'll have Semper Vivi plug his Twitter here in a moment as well. But if you want to follow along with the results, that is the place to go for that. Dave Meltzer and I will also be up later on this evening with a brand new radio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, running down all of the results of this show and talking all the news from the weekend. We had a show on Friday night as well. Have another one tomorrow night after Raw. Mike, what's your Twitter handle?
It's at Semper Vivi.
Well, that's easy.
It. My last name, very easy. Always alive in Latin.
Is that what it means? I think you've told me that before. Always alive.
Yes.
Wow.
Mighty Mediterranean roots.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
What does Alvarez mean in Spanish?
Awesome.
That's exactly.
That's right. We've got Samoa Joe and Magnus against Crimson and Matt Morgan for the tag team titles. I like Samoa Joe and Magnus. I hope they retain the titles. I presume they're going to. It appears they're leading towards the big breakup with Crimson and Matt Morgan. God forbid. God forbid! I don't know if people realize that we saw them feud, and it was no good, and they teamed up together, and it was a joyous day. Because that meant instead of a Matt Morgan and Crimson match on a show, now he only had one match involving both of them. Now it appears they are heading towards a breakup. I don't want to see them have singles matches again, especially with each other.
No, and I feel bad for Samoa Joe and Magnus, Sir Brutus Magnus, as he's known in Ring Cock King. But I see probably this is where this is going, and I guess, you know, it's still, you know, if Crimson and Morgan, I know that if they split apart again and they begin to feud, I know that won't be a good thing. But again, at least they're only taking up one match.
That is true. Bully Ray and James Storm are having a singles match. I think it's going to be all right. Bully Ray's a pretty good worker. James Storm can be carried to a good match. Although, as noted, he did have some issues with his knee. Had, I believe, a scope. I don't even know what he had done on it. Obviously, it wasn't a major surgery since he's wrestling here today. But that was very short. That was like this week or last week, I believe, he had that surgery. So this is the final match before the big match against Bobby Roode at Lockdown. So if James Storm doesn't win this match, these people have lost their minds.
Yeah, I don't know what his condition is. I hope he is good enough because, you know, in full strength, I'd actually be looking forward to this match. Either way, even if he was at full strength, I'm sure there'd be a bunch of plunder. And, you know, under the circumstances of not knowing how he's going to be, I expect lots of plunder. And Bully Ray, you know, it's like, you know, guys don't need titles to be over. Bully Ray doesn't need to even win any matches. He needs to go out there, you know, be a D-bag, point to his calves, and just be a bully when he can be a bully and back off when he's supposed to, and he's going to be great. And he's been one of the shining things in TNA. And, again, I was looking forward to this match, and hopefully James Storm can pull through it because, again, he'll need it for later on down the line.
We've got Robbie E. against a mystery opponent, his open challenge. I have an idea, but it's way too early to do it. If this were 6 months down the road, I think that they need to build up to a deal where Joseph Park Esquire is wandering around and he's asking everybody for information on the whereabouts of his brother Chris. And he gets blown off, he gets blown off, and he gets blown off. And one day he ends up in the ring. Maybe he comes out for an interview segment on a pay-per-view just to ask fans, in the pay-per-view universe if they have any information on his brother Chris. Here's a hotline number you can call or whatever. And he's interrupted by Robbie E., for example, who wants to do his open challenge, but god dang, there's this lawyer in the ring. So he cuts a promo on Joseph Park Esquire. And long story short, it leads to Joe Park doing a gigantic abyss comeback, complete with the black hole slam, and winning the championship! And then being completely befuddled about what his body has done.
Almost like the Incredible Hulk, Bill Bixby, when he started to get angry, something was happening, he didn't know was happening, and then he was just consumed and turning green and ripping off his shirt and becoming Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah. I don't care if any of this makes any sense. I just think the idea of Joe Park in his suit and his tie and his spectacles and the whole nine yards doing an abyss comeback would be like the best thing ever. And I think the place would go haywire for it.
Look, we all fell into wrestling through guilty pleasures, you know, and we know what's supposed to be right, but there are things that happen occasionally. For some people, it's Santino. For other people, it's, you know, who knows what it is. I never thought I could actually get behind Abyss ever again after all of the stuff he's been through, and unlike you, I have not blocked them out. I remember them all from, again, being Goldilocks' big bear to beating up Bobby Dempsey in ROH, all the way down to being beaten up by Dr. Stevie in an office, just looking pathetic, and the stupid ring with Hulk Hogan. I never thought I'd actually get into anything with Abyss again, and now this comes along, and I'm completely fine with this. I know it's goofy, but the tweets from Joe Park have been fantastic, being upset with fans who don't want to actually help the cause of trying to find his poor brother, and him rolling up on people into the back. I can actually get behind this. I'm completely fine with this.
I think it's great because, number one, after watching Abyss for all these years, just seeing him playing the character of Joe Parks, his own brother, I think that's hilarious, number one. And number two, there's nothing about this that could not be real, you know? If this were real, then, Abyss got beat up and left for dead by Bully Ray, and he took many months to recover, and clearly now he has a plan. He's searching for information. But he can't do it as Abyss. So he's dressed up, and now in real life, supposedly in storyline, he's playing his own brother, and he's lurking around trying to get information on something. I don't know what. Presumably Joe Parks has some sort of plan. Joe Park, I guess, not Parks. But I enjoy it. I think it's madly entertaining. And all I care about is being entertained. I want something on TNA that entertains me. And so far, Joe Park Esquire is entertaining me every single week.
And I'll say this, too. For Abyss, mashing his hand into glass and everything else that he's done to himself has been somewhat of a masochist. And, you know, doing that again, it's insane, you know, no matter how many people are around. But when in TNA you have people that are just kind of like waiting for the next thing and he does something crazy and then they want fire in the whole nine yards, to see him play a character where he's not killing himself, that also does not hurt my feelings. And his promos were good anyway as a monster, which is the unfortunate part in the direction that his character has gone so often in TNA, which has been right into a brick wall or right into embarrassment, which is why do you do that to a monster? I have no idea. So for him to be able to showcase his, you know, verbal talent this way has also been fantastic.
I mentioned this on one of our other shows, but I just want to throw this in before we go to the break. I found this hilarious. If you go to Wikipedia and you look at the article for this show, it says, and I quote, "Victory Road will feature professional wrestling matches that involve different wrestlers from pre-existing scripted feuds and storylines. Wrestlers portray villains, heroes, or less distinguishable characters in the scripted events that build tension and culminate in a wrestling match or a series of matches." Awesome. Back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Almost lost my train of thought there. I was thinking of one time, Mike, we've got many shows on our website, WrestlingObserver.com. Some don't even cover pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. One of them, After Dark, I interviewed Jeff Meldrum about Bigfoot. And I remember trying to... He's a professor. He's like an adjunct professor of biomechanics. And anyway, he had a title that was like 35 words long. And I remember listening back to the show and reading off his title and just laughing at myself about how preposterous this was. It's kind of how I felt there when I was rattling off all the different ways that you can listen to this particular program, this exemplary program here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. And speaking of exemplary programs, many of them available at WrestlingObserver.com. And many, I mean every show we've ever done dating back to 2005. There's tens of thousands of hours of audio if you sign up as a member. It's only $10.99 a month. $10.99 a month! And for that cost, you get not only every brand new show that we ever do, which is anywhere from 12 to 15 radio shows every single week, but... as noted, every show we've ever done. So if you've got a commute, if you like to listen to wrestling and mixed martial arts audio at work, if you like to listen to it when you ride your bike or perhaps you go to the gym, you want something to listen to, you'll never run out, ever run out of stuff to listen to if you sign up for our website. As noted, I did a show with Dave on Friday night. Got this show here today. We got another show tonight covering the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view and all the other news from the weekend. We've got another show up tomorrow for Raw, post-Raw show. And next week, we got a ton of shows. We got a number of guests as well. Low Key is going to be on the show next week. That's going to be interesting, talking about the WrestleMania weekend. We're going to have a WrestleMania Writers Week programming special, I believe. I got to set up the writers. Some of the writers are no longer available. And WWE, when they sign writers now, I think there's a provision that they can't go and talk about their stints in WWE afterwards. So it may not be like it used to be, but my God, we're going to try. The WrestleMania Writers Week episodes, former WWE writers talking about WrestleMania Week. Always a fun time. We've had it for years now. You can go back and check out past episodes of, well, there have been some awesome episodes of WrestleMania Writers Week. And a bunch of other stuff as well. So check it out. We got free radio shows up on the site. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest four free radio shows. Download them, and if you like what you hear, just think, 10 to 15 of those every single week, and a full archive of every one we've ever done. $10.99 a month, WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out, everybody. And, of course, head up to WrestlingObserver.com at 5 o'clock for live running play-by-play of the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view. I'll also be up live tweeting at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. So head up there and check that out. I'm also up on Facebook, facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez. Head up there and like that page. A lot of stuff there, Mike. I've promoted myself out.
You and there's still tons of stuff, including a brand new, if you become a member for only $10.99 a month, a new I Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare will be up later on today or sometime tonight, I believe. So check that out. So there you go.
That's right. Talking all about all sorts of different subjects, including Japanese pro wrestling. Mike, tell us about Matt Bloom, A-Train, who allegedly has signed with WWE, although he's now denying it.
Yes, been wrestling as Giant Bernard in Japan for several years. And I know people will say, what kind of name is Giant Bernard? Well, it's the name of a guy who actually got a great push in New Japan and held up his end of the bargain. Made it to basically semi-main event status, got some world title matches, IWGP title matches, and always had good ones, had some really good matches with Yuji Nagata and Hiroshi Tanahashi, and he's been a longtime member of a tag team with Carl Anderson that actually won this year's Observer Tag Team of the Year, and they have been quite good. A lot of people remember Carl Anderson from his stints in the NWA with Adam Pearce a couple years ago. He is dramatically improved and really has done a great job in New Japan, and it looked like Albert has signed with WWE, which would not be a shock. Carl Anderson, he's not scheduled for any tours coming up. Carl Anderson has announced that he is a singles wrestler now, so it looked like that the rumors of Prince Albert, as he was known in WWE, re-signing, you know, made a lot of sense. He's supposed to go in with a monster push. But then last night he was denying this on his Twitter and everything. But, you know, realistically, I think at his age, he just had a new child, I believe a daughter. And the fact that he's not going to make it into the main events really on a consistent basis in New Japan, and he's always got a home to go back to, this makes the most sense. And considering that the success they had with Mark Henry and being able to have a serious, you know, big guy that, you know, people take to him if they're treated properly. So it just seems to make the most sense. You know, obviously he's going to deny it until he's in, but it does make sense to me, at least all the way around.
We still have not finished our TNA pay-per-view preview. AJ Styles and Mr. Anderson versus Kazarian and Chris Daniels. Thoughts on this battle?
Well, you've had this little triangle with Kazarian, Daniels, and Styles now for a while, and Ken Anderson is back, so you needed a way to get him in, so why not?
I thought Mr. Anderson looked all right on Thursday. He had a good match, and he's back here tonight. I think this is probably... Let me look at this lineup. This could be one of the best matches on the show, believe it or not.
It's not going to be bad. I mean, it's not like Anderson is horrendous or anything like that. And the other three guys, you know, work with each other, you know, quite well and have for a long time. So this should actually just be it's going to be forgotten about, you know, as soon as it's over. But it should just be a really good match, or just at least a good match.
We've also got Austin Aries versus Zema Ion. Which
Zema
should
the
be.
Crippler Ion.
That's right. I'm done with that gimmick. Done with it.
It's really flat out just douchey in a business where, you know, there's a reason that Miz, you know, took it so bad for being out of position where R-Truth flip dive. You can talk all you want about, well, you know, guys doing these unneeded moves and stupid risks and all that stuff, but the fact of the matter is, you've got to be able to take care of, you know, the guy you're in the ring with. And you could die or get paralyzed or have something happen at any time, even over the smallest thing, if it just happens to go wrong. So to play this up, I think, is just really cheap and it's really stupid. I mean, you could use this as an opportunity to change Zema Ion's, you know, goofy character or something like that. But to turn it in this direction, I just think is just real classless.
I just think personally... I think that I wouldn't even really have so much of a problem with this if Jesse Sorensen was like up and he was jogging and he was lifting and his broken neck, I mean, if the bone had fused or whatever, I mean, if he was great and they were certain he was going to be able to come back, then yeah, that's okay. Make mention of the fact that you broke this guy's neck. But you know what? It's been less than a month. I don't think the guy is up and running and lifting and on his... I mean, Jesse Sorensen has tweeted that the doctors say his recovery is going better than expected. Great! That is great news. But until such a day comes where, like, he's good to go, this is just... I hate this up until that point, you know?
Well, even after that, too, I mean... He's a young guy who might be able to be talked into things. So, I mean, I'm not even saying, like, Shane Douglas with the pit bull, you know, and you know, with grabbing the halo and pushing him down or whatever it was. But I'd want it just to be on his terms at the very least. Because then, yeah, hey, that's pro wrestling. And you use that as you go along. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's how you do it, if it's tasteless or, you know, it's part of a really good story. So I'd rather have it that way, and it's just, I don't do backflips, or I didn't with Buff Bagwell, too, playing his up again. I just thought, again, there's a million and one things you can do. You don't have to do that, because it's one of those things I try to lock out of my brain when I'm watching pro wrestling.
I mean, it's easy to remind us of Jesse Sorensen without having the guy say that he's going to cripple all of his opponents. It's very easy. Just give us an update on him every week, you know?
And, yeah, that would be nice.
I don't know. I find it so tasteless. And it's so... To turn, like... I mean, my God, everybody saw the video of him and his mom, and they're both weeping and scared, and here you are. Now it's just a goofy pro wrestling storyline to get a guy over in a company where, quite frankly, no one's going to get over anytime soon because of the state of TNA. So I hate it. I don't ever want to see it again. So let's stop mentioning that he's going to paralyze his opponents, because he really did paralyze the guy, and we don't know if the guy is ever going to come back. So until we know that, I think it's just so tasteless to keep mentioning that. We have Gail Kim and Madison Rain for the Knockouts title. And, yeah, it'll be a match. Nothing more to say. It'll be better than the Velvet Sky match on Thursday.
Gail Kim's pretty. That's it.
So yeah, Madison.
Velvet Sky, it surprised me. Why did they cut off her ring entrance there?
Whose?
Didn't show the full shake in there or anything like that there before she dove in with the spear.
Velvet?
Yes.
Because she's mad.
Ah.
Yeah. Don't ask me. That is the Victory Road lineup, everybody. As noted, it's taking place the moment this show goes off the air. Live running play-by-play at WrestlingObserver.com. And live tweeting, as they call it, at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. So check it out. Dave and I are going to be up later on with a brand new radio show talking about that event as well. Let's get into some other news. Where should we begin? Since we only have a couple of minutes here before the next break.
Really, I know it blew off the Reign-Kim match, but that's about the second best match you could possibly have. So it shouldn't say anything about that, because Madison Rain has gotten a lot better, and Gail Kim, outside of Mickie James, is about as good as you can get.
I got a topic we could spend 2 minutes on here before the break, but we don't need to spend more than 2 minutes on it. WWE going back to Lionsgate to do a sequel of Leprechaun.
Sure. Sure. Look, if you're going to blow money on movies, the one that actually made you, or at least I don't know how, ultimately, it ended up being internationally or anything like that, but the one that got the most acclaim was See No Evil, so you go back to that same group, and, I guess you might as well see if lightning can strike twice with the horror flick, because you tried to do the, the educational feel-good pick or whatever it was, and that didn't work. All the goofy comedies haven't worked. Nothing's really worked, so I guess the one that got the most acclaim, you might as well go back to that again if you are insistent on spending your money.
Actually, that's sort of a myth. I guess it got the most acclaim because it was like their first big film, but See No Evil ultimately lost money, and
it lost like $2 million or something, right?
It lost a fair amount of money. But the point I'm making here is I had a big argument about John Cena the other day with Todd Martin on our other show, and 2 days after that argument, when looking through the stats, because someone else. I was doing the Daily Update talking about the movies and Leprechaun and that sort of thing. Somebody had sent me all the Leprechaun information and that sort of thing. And I was looking through all of the movie numbers. And the most successful movie, by far, and I mean by $13 million, the only, I can't say the only profitable movie, because there were two movies that made like $1 million. But the movie that made the most money by far, $14 million profit. It beat the other two profitable movies by $13 million, was The Marine. With who? John Cena, in fact. And here they are going back to Lionsgate. I don't know. I actually could talk a lot more about this, but we're heading up to the break. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody. Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, 2 hours every Sunday. We only got a couple of minutes here before our top of the hour break, so I'm going to continue with my rant about Leprechaun. See No Evil made no money, everyone. None of the Lionsgate films have made any money. The only movie that made any money was The Marine with John Cena. Well, good money. Ted DiBiase's Marine made like $500,000. And actually, Ken Anderson's movie made like $1 million. Other than that, they all lost money. Some of them a lot of money. So, after losing money and deciding to find a way to rehabilitate a sinking division. I don't know if even sinking is the right word, because really, with the exception of one movie, it was never above water. But still, they have decided to go back to the beginning, to go back to what they did on day one. They're going to remake Leprechaun. First off, has there been a great clamoring for a remake of Leprechaun? They did like five Leprechaun films. I don't think most people saw 2, 3, 4, or 5. I don't think most people saw 1. So here we are doing a remake of this film. And of course, as soon as WWE announces they're remaking Leprechaun, what is the absolute first thing that every single person thought?
Hornswoggle. Mike?
Yes, it's Hornswoggle in the lead role. Hornswoggle? You're going to rehab your sinking movie division by going back to Lionsgate, which never made a profitable movie for you, with a film that, quite frankly, may in the lead role star Hornswoggle? Hornswoggle is a children's character. The children aren't going to go watch Hornswoggle in Leprechaun. This sounds like a hideous idea.
I don't know. Maybe they could save money by just having the wrestlers themselves play all of the roles.
I got a better idea. What they should do is they should use movie magic to have the Leprechaun played by the Big Show. How's that?
It's just his huge bald head on top of like Hornswoggle's body.
Exactly. Top of the hour break, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, Sports Byline USA Radio affiliates nationwide, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Got a couple of minutes before the break. I got to talk more about what we were talking about before the hourly break. My fabulous idea for the remake of Leprechaun. I've been thinking more about this in the last 7 minutes or so. This is my idea, Mike. Nobody cares about just another remake of Leprechaun. Nobody cares about another remake of Leprechaun with WWE stars. However, you could make them care. What you do is you have the Leprechauns played by your biggest WWE stars. And by biggest, I mean The Great Khali, Big Show, guys of that ilk, Kane. And you use movie magic, much like Lord of the Rings and, what was that guy? The dwarf, who in real life is like 6'8 or something. And they made him a dwarf for Lord of the Rings. You do the same thing with the Giants in WWE. You have Big Show and the Great Khali and Kane and all these Giants play the Leprechauns. And then you find your smallest competitors like Rey Mysterio and Hornswoggle and AJ, and you have these people play your regular-sized humans through movie magic. I think this would be just the wackiest movie of all time. And I'd go see it.
See, going in that direction, it's got to be some sort of swashbuckling epic where the good guys get the win, or some sort of, you know, It's a Mad World, or, I don't know, some sort of Mel Brooks style of thing, which is probably something they should go with. I would rather see a Mel Brooks style production than Leprechaun 2.
I just love the idea of
17, whatever it is.
AJ through movie magic looking 6 feet tall, being chased by Great Khali, who through movie magic looks 2.5 feet tall. That's money! Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide, maybe universe-wide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff to talk about today here, Mike. Let's get into Raw from Monday night. We had a rock concert and a battle rap. I thought the rap was... I thought it sucked, quite frankly, the whole segment. But I did enjoy the Rock's rock concert. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe they're supposed to get people like me to go, man, that Rock segment, that's pretty cool. But boy, John Cena dressed up like that, what a geek. And further, the Rock Cena storyline where we're supposed to choose sides. What did you think of the segment on Monday?
It was a real placeholder, way to do things by announcing that they were going to have that, and that's how they were going to have their interaction on Monday night. I just think with the positive steps you've taken, with Cena, I'm a little more partial to that character than some people are. I didn't hate it as much as a lot of people, but it's like you're taking a step back, and aren't you supposed to be ratcheting up the intensity, week after week, and they step backwards with it. It's like, Cena, old school vintage Cena. Why can't he just incorporate the rap into, being more serious and more ass kicking the same way he did a couple weeks ago when he busted out a rap? I mean, go that direction. Now The Rock is The Rock, and that was fine. Although the thing at the end with the kids, it's like they had to get out by 11:15, with obligations to USA that the karaoke machine guy was running the thing way too fast. But, as far as the rest of it went, I was completely actually fine with what The Rock did because that's The Rock. I just think it was kind of a placeholder of a thing. And I remember when, and they couldn't do it, but I remember when Austin and Rock had the sing-off back and forth with each other, and Austin sang Delta Dawn, and, the Rock, they sang Margaritaville together or whatever it was, and The Rock said he'd never forget Rock Bottom him. I think that would have been a better off thing to do, at the end than instead of just using, doing it as a placeholder show. And frankly, I don't think really accomplishing anything. I don't think they hurt anything, but again, it doesn't make Cena look in the best light, going after this, and it doesn't give me much confidence that they're going to treat him like they should be treating him, which is have him be a goof, fine, play to the kids and all that sort of stuff, but at least have him kick some ass so people can somewhat respect him.
I don't know if they wanted to do a Rock Bottom on this show. I think the whole idea...
Not this one.
Well, the whole placeholder is they got to come up with ideas so they don't touch. I just thought the rap gimmick was lame. I just thought it was lame. I mean, I thought he was great last week. And by last week, I mean the week prior to the rap gimmick. I thought he seemed like a real person. Seemed like a real guy. Seemed like a, I don't want to say a normal dude, but certainly not an abnormal dude. And then it all went out the window when he put his costume on. His hat, his chain, his lock, and his stole thing. And the mean face, and the goofy rap with the planter's peanuts. Whole thing just came off so corny to me.
Even the curse word. Even, ooh, he cursed.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't believe a word he said. I didn't take him seriously for a moment. And that, to me, was a negative. Whereas, it's not like you can really take Rock seriously doing a rock concert, but you know what you're getting going in. This is The Rock. This is what he does. He plays the guitar, and he sings songs. He's done this a million times. He's an entertainer. That's the whole idea. The whole idea of the storyline is supposed to be, at least according to John Cena, I'm here every week, I'm wrestling, I'm destroying myself, my body, whatever, and you're in Hollywood making movies. So here was the opportunity to show Rock being simply an entertainer. And then John Cena, what they should have done, if you ask me, although it wouldn't have worked because Rock is just so much bigger of a star when you watch the two segments back to back, but Rock should have, they should have done this on two separate weeks. Like, Rock's going to do his Rock concert this week, and Cena will have a rebuttal next week. So you don't even have Cena on last week's show. I don't even think he needed him. He was there for his rap battle. It lasted a minute, and that was it. But have Rock come out and be The Rock and be the entertainer. And then John Cena can come out this week and just bury the segment. Just go, see, this is absolutely everything I was talking about. A week ago, you talked about how when you strip it all away, you're 6'6", 260, and you're going to tear my throat out. And the next thing you know, you're singing and you're plucking a guitar and you're kissing up to the fans of Cleveland. That's all you are, Rock. You're an entertainer. And meanwhile, I'm gonna destroy you at WrestleMania. It's something like that, where Rock rocks and rolls his way right into Cena's entire point for the last couple of months now. But instead, it was like, Rock, John Cena, and everything, talking about stripping it all away. And meanwhile, on Monday, John Cena not only stripped it all away, he bathed himself in this phoniness. I just didn't like it.
No, and that's it's. Remember when The Undertaker and Triple H wrestled at WrestleMania? I don't know when it was now, the early 2000s, I think it was, where, you know, Triple H laid him out, and, you know, after knocking over his motorcycle in the back, and Triple H had his little leather jean jacket combination on, and he put the chair on Undertaker's throat. They're not doing that, so why is John Cena going back in time and breaking out the, you know, his Mitchell and Ness gear in the backwards hat? It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you were getting traction with him going forward and shaking the goofiness, and like you said, you go back to Monday, and, you know, he is bathing himself in it, and it just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't accomplish anything. Yeah, I guess I can understand their mentality. That was where he, you know, people hated him so much he started to get over because the raps were good and he did improve in the ring and they had him matched up with guys where he looked good. Where they're thinking that, they're also thinking, I'm sure that we're going to sell some more merchandise and stuff like that out of this too. You know, have some like throwback little plush doll for kids to buy or something like that, you know, along with this. But, you know, again, it just for his character and for what they need him to be coming out of this, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, him and Alberto Del Rio are two of the major ones where it's just like, you know, they need to come out of WrestleMania being better than what they are and being treated better than what they are. Mark Henry's another one because you need these guys to chug along. And, you know, The Rock is going to be gone. And still, if people aren't taking Cena seriously or there's a segment that isn't and he's just being a cornball, then, you know, what are you really accomplishing? When those people, same people, will turn around and actually give him somewhat of a positive reaction when you actually treat him respectfully.
What do you think of this? Shawn Michaels, I guess it was Shawn Michaels and Undertaker this week.
So who made Shawn Michaels the referee for this match?
Well, that has not been revealed.
That's the part I'm waiting for. And it was, I mean, again, this, I was a proponent of not putting Shawn Michaels into this match because I didn't think he needed it, especially after announcing Hell in the Cell. But, you know, because of who the three of them are, you know it's going to be awesome. And all those little, you know, details like that are going to be, you know, sewn up as they go along. So I'm even though I didn't think he even needed Shawn Michaels for this, I'm still excited about where this can go and the back and forth over, you know, who made the calls and will Vince get involved? We haven't seen Vince in a while. Could it be possible that you know, he would get involved in this and everything else with will it's a good way to build drama for will the streak end, because I don't know how long Undertaker can do this for as far as the years go along, but, you know, to make it somewhat special, there's got to be, you know, some thought over the Undertaker possibly losing his streak, and this was a good way to go about doing it with Shawn Michaels. It was the easiest way by far.
I would be stunned if the streak ended, ever.
Yeah, and it shouldn't. Even if Undertaker wanted it to, why? That one doesn't make any sense. He's always been the ultimate company guy. He's always, I mean, been an independent voice too, but he is the epitome of when a pro wrestling character, he was a goof, he was Kane the Undertaker. He was Mean Mark Callis. And for him to reinvent himself so many times and be the statuesque figure he was and is for WWE, that's got to be the one iconic thing. Why take that away out of your legacy? It just doesn't make any sense.
We can talk about this more after the break, but next year's WrestleMania is going to be interesting if Undertaker wrestles again. Who will he wrestle? Let's talk about that when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, talking about WrestleMania, and I was thinking about this. We had Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels 2 years in a row. Great matches. Now we've got Undertaker versus Triple H 2 years in a row. Great matches. Well, I don't know about this year's, but last year's was great. Shawn Michaels is the referee this year, and what a storyline they've got. Shawn Michaels going to end the streak after failing 2 years in a row. Is Shawn Michaels going to be the man responsible for breaking the streak prior to 20-0? My guess is no, he will not. But it's a good storyline. That brings us to next year. Part of me thinks 20-0, they're billing it as the end of an era. Undertaker should retire once he hits 20-0. But there's the other part of me that thinks this dude only needs to wrestle once a year. He could probably make it to 25-0. Quarter century undefeated at WrestleMania. It's pretty impressive. I mean, 20-0 is pretty impressive, but 25 as well. He could make 25-0 if he really wanted to, but after two matches with Shawn Michaels, two matches with Triple H, the Shawn Michaels-Triple H secret plan, which isn't really very secret this week, to destroy the streak, what next? Sheamus next year? Wade Barrett? Where do you possibly go from here?
If it's the only way you could do Wade Barrett would have to have right after WrestleMania, a monster Brock Lesnar-esque size push, and people take to him that way. You know, his mouth is great, and they would. But that's the only person, you know, I could think of as far as a regular guy goes that's on the roster now that you could actually go and try to create some drama for it and have a backstory of when he was with Nexus. Because remember last year, the thoughts after WrestleMania 2 years ago where it was like, well, we'll get Sheamus and Triple H at WrestleMania, and obviously Sheamus won King of the Ring, and it was all downhill from there. And obviously Wade Barrett was not ready for Undertaker, and Undertaker and Triple H made a hell of a lot more sense for both of those guys. You know, Barrett's the only one I could see actually doing that with. There is Randy Orton, who is, you know, you could do the Legend Killer thing, and people would take to that, and I think the WWE fan base would believe it, although, you know, and outside of that, you know, you have Steve Austin for one last possible match, but people would probably think it's just going to be one last possible match. So unless it was announced as the same thing for both guys, where you could have some drama that way, I don't think that would be it. And then outside of that, I'm not Sting. It could be Sting too, but again, I don't think, even if somehow Sting's contract ran out down the line or something like that in 2 years from now, it ends up being him. They do it somewhere. I don't think people would necessarily buy it.
It's an interesting question. I'm trying to think of possible. To me, it's almost like you got to just bring someone back every year. Like maybe Steve Austin comes back, the old gunslinger, for one more with The Undertaker. Or I think he can do Rock, just because no one believes Rock's going to lose or going to win. Rock loses to everybody. And outside of that, I mean, I don't think anyone would really care about Ric Flair Undertaker again.
Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar would be good. But the one with the concern to me with Brock Lesnar is he's big and he's strong.
Yeah. That's the problem with anything with Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Which is why at least Undertaker and Austin, if you're going to do a last one of errors and characters, next year at the Meadowlands, the Meadowlands, or if you wait on that, because I think the issue why they went, and I'm not saying they went with New York this year, for any other reason, you know, because it was good and everything. But Dallas, that Jerry Jones's arena, I think, was not available. The Texas Stadium. So if you did Undertaker Austin at Texas Stadium, I mean, you're looking at a legitimate, unlike WrestleMania 3, attendance record for that show, and that would do it. And those two guys at least could trust each other fully, and they would not have to do. They could be Johnny Valentine for 20 minutes. And just stand there and look at the crowd, and people couldn't care less. So at least you'd have that, too.
I've got it. For next year in the New York market, Bruno Sammartino. No?
You know what? My money's on Bruno.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, for $10.99 a month, and I'm serious. You and Dave Meltzer did three interviews with Bruno Sammartino.
I think more than three, actually.
20 times. I mean, it's worth hundreds of dollars, in my mind, those three interviews you did. And for only $10.99 a month, you have access to those three.
He's a pretty great fella. I think with Undertaker, the whole key is also why Bruno wouldn't work. I just think that, like, this is the hole they've dug. The streak is now so big that every year I feel, maybe I'm wrong, I feel that every year the only way to get people to really care about the match is you have to make them believe that the other guy might not lose, that the other guy might win. And, I mean, that's the whole deal here is, you know, Triple H is, he's Triple H. He's got his buddy in the cage with him. You know, they're doing everything in their power to make you think that maybe Undertaker is going to lose this year. So, I don't really know who's left to do that with. I mean, maybe you can find, like, a young guy, and you can convince the audience that Undertaker's old. This guy is the young guy on the rise. It's if anyone is ever going to break the streak, it's going to be this guy. But I don't know. There's no one right now that you could believably do that with. And
no, it's the guys that we just named, and that's it.
I mean, even with Brock, it's like, to me, and this would never in a million years happen, but Brock Lesnar would like have to win the UFC title and then come in as champion and face Undertaker. And then people would believe like, well, you know, he's the champion of UFC. Dana would never let him lose. You know, that's the kind of thing you need. Brock just coming in, it's like, meh, I don't think anyone believes that Brock is going to refuse to do a job to the Undertaker. I just think to really make people care, or maybe, you know what, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody just wants to see Undertaker beat a geek and keep the streak alive every year at WrestleMania. And that may be
I think it's a little of both. I think, honestly, it's a little of both, where if you could not come up with a good enough storyline, but you at least had a big enough name, I think people are fine with that.
Maybe. Maybe you book Undertaker versus somebody who is such a non-threat that you get people thinking it must be a swerve. Santino, for example.
Just about to say.
In New Jersey, even though his gimmick is that he's supposed to be from Italy, but still, if you had Undertaker versus Santino at WrestleMania next year, maybe you would get this underground swelling of fans believing, wait a second, Undertaker versus Santino, they must have something planned. They must have some sort of swerve. And Undertaker just beats him.
I got it. And this could actually kill two birds with one stone. Remember how WWE Films actually did the WrestleMania documentary?
Yeah.
Check this out. Undertaker in a tag match, you know, just like they were going to do with Nathan Jones that one year at WrestleMania when he was biker guy against the FBI. No one will ever remember except for me just doing it. You could actually have Santino and Bruno Sammartino, because there's lots of Italians in New Jersey and in New York, and you could play off of that, and you have them against The Undertaker and Cornswoggle as Leprechaun.
Cornswoggle?
Hornswoggle. Or you actually have, leading up to this, some crazy characters that The Undertaker has mystically appeared, like Cornswoggle, and you can have a gaggle of midgets running around, all smelling like cabbage, all working for The Undertaker, and I don't know how that creates doubt that he may lose, but they will wrestle Santino and Bruno Sammartino.
What if you had a let me think about how you do this. Maybe you could do a tag match, and you have two strong opponents, like Rock and Steve Austin, and they're facing Undertaker, and for some reason he got kind of a weak opponent, not like a Santino, but maybe someone who you thought, maybe this man is in this match to do the job, which would kill the Undertaker streak.
That's possible, too, although I'm really...
I think a singles match is the way to go.
I'm really thinking about evil midgets now around with the Undertaker, like Cornswoggle to go with Hornswoggle. We could have Matt Bornswoggle, you know, getting a one-night appearance.
Show's off the rails, Mike.
I know, completely. You know, and again, I don't think it matters. The Undertaker, obviously, you know, creating some doubt and breaking the streak makes the most sense. But realistically, for WWE fans and what WrestleMania is, you could get away with that. Just have him with a big enough name, and people will be more than satisfied.
You know who it doesn't need to be next year?
Who?
Kane!
No, it does not.
All right, everybody, let's move on here. What are your thoughts on this season of Ultimate Fighter?
You know, I saw the knockout on Friday night. I walked in, my wife was watching. I didn't get a chance to see the entire thing yet. You know, I've never been a big fan of the show, really, after the first couple of seasons. I don't like drunken fools that much. I don't care that they're tweeting now.
You work at a bar.
No, I worked in a liquor store.
Oh. Well, I guess. You didn't see a bunch of drunken fools last night?
Look, it's not something I care about that much, you know, and watching him do it, just, you know, I'd rather see a two-hour documentary or an hour-long documentary on somebody getting ready for a fight, you know, done in a good fashion than watch that. And the first show was so bad to me, and I think it was just so bad to have it, you know, on a major cable network like FX that it's really going to have to, I'm going to watch it, you know, just to see if I can get into it. And again, the knockout at the end was awesome, and I can't complain about the knockouts two Friday nights ago, but it's still, it just, I don't know, that first show was terrible to me.
All right, we're going to talk more about this after the break. I got some stuff to say as well. Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of stuff to talk about today. We're in the middle of a discussion about Ultimate Fighter, and for those of you that enjoy this show, this past Friday night, Dave Meltzer and I, brand new show covering Ultimate Fighter, SmackDown, and Bellator. We're doing it every Friday during this live Ultimate Fighter season. It's one of approximately 15 shows produced on the website every single week. If you love this show, I'll make it quick. I guarantee, let me say that again. If you love this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 a month. You get brand new shows virtually every single day. In fact, on many days, you get as many as 3 to 4 shows in a single day. Head up to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. A listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. 4 free radio shows, actually. Download them all. They are a number of different shows. You can sample them, see what you like. Maybe you like all of them. Bottom line, if you like them, 10 to 15 shows every single week, plus an archive of tens of thousands of hours of audio shows. Every single show that we have ever done, dating back to 2005, is available in our archives right now. It's only $10.99 a month. No extra fees, nothing. Just sign up, do a search, start downloading. You'll never run out of audio. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking about Ultimate Fighter. I thought that Friday's show was significantly better than the Fight Your Way Into the House show. I've never been a fan of Fight Your Way Into the House. There's fighting on all the time. A bunch of fights with guys that go quickly. You have no idea who any of these guys are. You have no commentators telling you who the guys are. There's a reason that the fans tuned out as the show went on. I mean, unless you're a hardcore fan, you see a couple of people you've never heard of getting in a fight, you've seen them all. It's much better this week. They built up some characters, they built up some storylines, they built up some feuds and rivalries, and then they had a fight. Great! It was an hour long, it was easy, it was simple. I don't think it's going to do a great number, we shall see. Friday night is just a bad night. You're going up against SmackDown, you got Bellator on. SmackDown did a good rating last week. Ultimate Fighter got killed, Bellator got killed. Friday night, for 18 to 34-year-old guys, are not sitting home and watching 3 hours of fighting, or probably even an hour of a reality show on a Friday night. Maybe they'll DVR it for later. I think a lot of people will do that, but it'll be interesting to see the ratings. I think that Dana White's claim that it's going to be the highest-rated season of Ultimate Fighter ever, I think he's going to be gravely disappointed, but we shall see.
No, it just that they have such an uphill battle, I think, for any fan that was not a coming over from Spike in the way they did that first show. And I really thought they should have just cut him in half, did 6, give more of a profile, you know, a personality piece. They could have broke that up into 2 shows. And again, the idea that they were going to sit there and be mic'd up and talk, you know, at first it didn't take. And then, you know, again, as you said, the numbers went down as the night went on, even though there were stoppages, and they were interesting stoppages, you know, early on, and they kept going throughout the night. So it wasn't about the what they were seeing. They just, you know, people just tuned out of it. And again, it may be, you know, FX is going to be fine with it, but I just think that the way it went was really disappointing, and we'll see if we can get, you know, those people can actually come back.
Now, we've got no UFCs, as noted, until mid-April, but coming up in mid-April, we've got what could be the big pay-per-view of the year for UFC. It is Bones Jones and Rashad Evans, and there are people who believe that with the possible exception of the return of GSP, this is going to be the most purchased UFC pay-per-view of 2012. Have you had a chance to see any of the preview footage they've put up, and what are your thoughts on this show in terms of a buy rate?
Yeah, I have actually. I saw what they were sending out, and it's just, you know, when you have something that good, even though, I mean, I always thought, could it hurt the fight, and will this fight ever end up happening? And, you know, much like Rampage and Rashad, I mean, even no matter how long you would have waited, it doesn't matter. Rashad John Jones is going to be an awesome fight, and the stuff they have leading into it with, you know, Rashad in the cage, and, you know, they start off their video with the whole thing that, you know, hey, we made this pact that we weren't going to fight each other and all that sort of stuff, and the bad feelings being really played up, it's going to do a really great number. Obviously, I think GSP coming back, if he's, you know, comes back for a big fight, you know, it is going to be big, but I think this could actually even be higher than that. I mean, I could see GSP Condit, you know, being outdrawn by this, I think, absolutely. And I'm not sure exactly, I wouldn't want to say right now what it's going to do, but, you know, it's going to be way, way, way up there. And, you know, I'm like 800,000 range.
Million?
I just want to sit back and take a little bit of a look and see and see what's on the rest of the card and everything. But, I mean, yeah, it's going to truly be pushing that. And I can see, you know, GSP coming back with, again, with a good opponent and doing 750,000 buys, which is, you know, still absolutely fantastic. You know, the De La Hoya Mayweather 2.4 million kind of blew people out on what, you know, a success is. And 750,000 will be a success. But I can see Jones and Evans doing far, far more than that. In fact, I think it will.
You know, one thing that's a little bit unfortunate about the pay-per-view is that it is the it's actually a plus and minus. The pluses are it's the first pay-per-view after like 6 weeks off, which that right there, I mean, if the show was going to do 800, maybe it's going to do a million now because it's been so long between pay-per-views. The negative is that we don't really know, because it's such a huge show, we don't really know what it means to have 6 weeks between shows. You know, if this were just your average show, let's say this was Frankie Edgar, Ben Henderson 3. You know, if that were the mid-April show, and that ended up doing like 700,000 buys, which probably wouldn't do. But you know what? With no UFC for 5 or 6 weeks prior to a pay-per-view, maybe it would do a gigantic number. Maybe all of your friends, when you say, hey, there's UFC this Saturday, they'd be like, God, I can't even remember the last UFC. You're like, that's right, come on over. And it does a huge number. But you can't really determine if 6 weeks off between shows results in a giant number, because the show that's coming after 6 weeks, it's going to do a giant number no matter what.
Not necessarily. You assume there's going to be good rebound back.
No, this show is going to do a giant number no matter what.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, so because of that, you just have to go with the thought that, in theory, part of the increase is going to be because people are, quote-unquote, starved out compared to how they have been, and it's a fight that not only the mainstream but all the hardcores out there want to see, so you have everything working in positive advantage, so you have to put it towards the back of the line because you can't prove it outright. But realistically, I think if you look at trends with pay-per-views and things like that, where you do have, you know, chasms in either in wrestling or in boxing or even in MMA, I bet if you look back where there's been a little bit of a delay before a bigger fight, and that, you know, everything probably helps it along.
Who wins?
I don't know. I saw and went to Rashad Evans' last couple fights and, you know, was up close to him, and he looks good. He has looked really good, and I know I am insane to pick against John Jones, just being a physical freak and everything that he can do. But I will say Rashad Evans right now. But I know it doesn't even matter. I wouldn't touch this fight or bet on this fight because it could go either way. And betting against John Jones is probably the wrong thing to do. So I definitely won't do it. But I'll say Rashad Evans.
How have you done in predictions of late?
No, you bail every time on this.
No, how have you done in predictions of late?
Me? Over the last 2 years, I actually have picked the most correct fights.
Really?
Yes. Really? I'm actually not doing too bad this year, although Oliver and Mike Sawyer are rolling with this thing.
Yeah, they
are. Absolutely running away.
Oliver hadn't had the best record for quite a while on our picks at WrestlingObserver.com, but he sure turned it around.
Tough Talk guys actually might know what they're talking about a little bit here.
I need to get back into it. I need to. I've taken some time off to recharge and talk to my psychic sources.
Snorky.
And I'm going to be back with a vengeance, starting with the John Jones pay-per-view, in which I am at this point, and probably until the day of the fight, picking Bones Jones to win this fight. Rashad has looked great. I'm not going to lie. Rashad has looked great. I mean, you know what? Jones has run through everybody. Not just beaten everybody. He's run through everybody. So, I do think it is preposterous to pick against him at this point.
The new commercial with him, I know it doesn't matter in the fight aspect of this, but the new commercial that debuted during the first night of The Ultimate Fighter, I believe it was, fantastic. And again, another good one. Another one we didn't talk about either, and it would have been a lot better if he had won. But Frankie Edgar's one commercial on Fox with the Tiger to hype that up on football that took place after his fight was another good one, too. So at least they've had a line of good spots like that that actually tug at you or make you laugh or something like that and at least get you more interested.
What do you think of Quentin Jackson of late? He's gone off the deep end, as they say.
Well, hopefully he doesn't do too much driving then.
I hope so.
You know, I don't know exactly what it is he wants. I really like Quentin Jackson a lot, but with that said, he looks like he wants an out, and he's trying to figure out a way to get an out, and by acting this way, I mean, to admit that testosterone replacement therapy and act like, you know, hey, it's just some magic formula. Anyone ever heard of this stuff? And his ways of trying, and now, you know, they announced the fight with Shogun, and then he's announced, well, if I'm going to have the fight, I got to get double knee surgery first. It's like,
which I'm sure UFC will pay for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't quite understand what's going on. If you want to leave and go to Hollywood, if you want to go leave and do something else, cool.
Boxing.
But I just don't quite understand his methodology about this or why, you know, he's been ripped off or this, that, and the other. I don't get it.
Yeah, he wants to be a boxer. They make so much money.
He's been.
Did I knock you for a loop right there?
It's all about the money with Rampage. I remember that from his Pride promos. But he has been ripped off to the point. I mean, he has been shorted. He has not gotten his pay per view. What is it? Where? I mean, I can see a guy in the undercard complaining about this, and there's lots of guys who may have a case against the UFC. I mean, obviously, Ken Shamrock is always going to say that he's got one against them. But for God's sakes, I mean, really, Quentin Jackson? That's the guy.
You're our boxing correspondent, and now, granted, if Quentin Jackson left UFC and wanted to do a big money fight, he'd get a big one right out of the gate because it'd be Quentin Jackson, UFC star, against a boxer who'd knock him out quick. So I'm sure there's a boxing promoter somewhere that would pay huge money for that first fight. After that, realistically, what's Quentin Jackson going to make for a boxing match?
A couple hundred grand. I can't even see that. Not the money he'd make in the UFC. At the end of the day, not the money he'd make in the UFC. Merchandise selling, even on his own, if he just took it all in-house and he only had his stuff. I mean, he gets more visibility from the UFC than he does boxing. I mean, what, a fight with Roy Jones Jr.? Okay, then what? Who cares? It's just not going to work.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, have I got a segment to talk about? I don't know why I saved it for one of the shorter segments on the show, but I did. Maybe we'll talk about it more next week. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for about two more minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Mike, I saved it for the bitter end. Are you going to be going to a Vince Russo booking seminar?
You know what? I don't think I'm going to be able to, but, you know, the wise sage, as Vince Russo is, you know, I would consider it just to see how he was treated by everyone in that crowd because, you know, that would be the only way I think this is going to be entertaining because what he has to say, I don't really think I care too much. You know, the Karen Angle thing, I'll give him credit for and that's it, but everything else, maybe not so much.
I can only imagine the crowds will be drawn.
Oh, it's going to be, yes. It's got train wreck written all over it. It most certainly does. And this is taking place in New York or New Jersey, something like that?
I don't know where it's at, to be honest with you. He's available for them. So it can be anywhere.
I could do it
in Seattle if I wanted to. I just sit there and I look at them and I think, can you imagine these poor schmucks who go to this deal and then they try and get a job in TNA or WWE and they put on their resume, attended Vince Russo booking seminar. You're finished, Holmes. You're finished.
Who's going to pay for this?
I don't know. We'll soon find out, I guess. We'll soon find out. I wouldn't.
I want to see Jim Cornette pay for this.
Oh, he won't.
How about somebody else pays for Jim Cornette to go?
Maybe Jim Cornette can put on a lucha mask and sneak in like Conan did at a CMLL show recently.
And just lose his ever-loving mind? I would pay for that. I'll pay Jim Cornette's ticket for that.
All right, well, I'll talk to him about that then. All right, everybody, we're out of time. The TNA pay-per-view is about to begin. Head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer, live running play-by-play of the show. I'll also be doing live tweeting of the show at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. That's at Brian Alvarez. So head up there and check that out. At Sempervivi is Mike's Twitter handle. Facebook.com, official Brian Alvarez. Check that out as well. Going to be back later tonight with a brand new radio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. And we will be back next week with a brand new show here on Sports Byline. Thanks, y'all, for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.